Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name is J.T. Clark, and I'm going to share a story with you in just a minute that surrounds love and forgiveness. It surrounds obedience and hope. And before I begin, I'd like to also acknowledge my fellow fathers that are with us today and just wish each of you a happy Father's Day. I have a pleasure this morning of having my eldest daughter with us, Jordan, and certainly my Proverbs 31 wife with me as well, Terry Lee. And we are just really appreciative of the opportunity to be with you this morning. We appreciate the offer from Quentin to be with you, and then we appreciate the church leadership as well as Craig inviting us to be a part of your service this morning. As I begin testimony to share with you, I need to remind myself that all glory goes to God. And this story is a true story. It's a tragic story. There's an unusual twist in the midst. And I'm certain someone that's with us today will be touched by what you hear. The story begins the night of August 21st, last year. It was a Friday night. My brother and his wife, who live in Floyd, had traveled to Bassett, Virginia. They were leading a motorcycle delegation from Floyd to Bassett to worship at a biker church on a Friday night. My brother was interested, as you see, he was a pastor. He was interested in starting a biker church, a chapter of this ministry in Floyd. And so he had taken a group over to experience what this might be like. The pastor that they were going to hear is a man named Mike Price. And Mike Price, as you see, trained up under my brother. He had served as a junior pastor to my brother and trained up. My brother was there the night Mike Price got saved. On this night, August 21st, I too was in Bassett. My wife and I and our kids, we live in Boone's Mill. But you see, I volunteer with a high school football team in Bassett. I'm a member of the chain crew. My job is to keep track of downs, first down, second down, so forth. And when you're a member of the chain crew, you're assigned to work the visiting team sideline. And as it would happen, Bassett High School was playing Floyd County High School in that game that night. And so I found myself on the visiting team sideline with people that knew well of my brother. And as brothers will do, I was making jokes about him with some of the folks that knew him. In the second half of the football game, an ambulance that had been assigned to work the game in case somebody got hurt had to leave. It left the stadium, and about a half a mile away, this ambulance developed a mechanical problem. It overheated, it caught fire, and it burned up. From the stadium, we could see the column of smoke rising into the sky. And we could hear the oxygen cylinders as they exploded in the fire. The game ended. I left the stadium. I made a right turn. I went to 220 and I headed north to go home. There was a man at the game with his 15-year-old son. And he too left. Except he made a left turn to travel down toward this where this ambulance had been burning. By now it had been extinguished, but the road was still shut down. He had to make a detour that had been established to come around behind the CVS store and out onto a road known as T.B. Stanley Highway. At the same time, my brother was now leading this delegation back to Floyd on their motorcycles. And he had understood that this ambulance fire had happened on a parallel road known as 57, when in reality it happened on 57A. And so he made a left turn off of 57 onto T.B. Stanley Highway, which is where this detour had been established. And when he got to a point where this gentleman had been detoured to, the driver of the truck accidentally turned into the wrong travel lane. And witnesses said that as my brother tried to avoid hitting him, he overcorrected with the handlebars hard to the right. The motorcycle skidded safely off to the side, but my brother and his wife were thrown to the asphalt, and the front wheels of that pickup truck crushed them. One:30 Saturday morning, my phone rings. It's my mother. And she tells me that my brother and his wife have been killed. And the next morning when it surfaces that this happened in Bassett and that there had been an ambulance fire, I just couldn't believe it. The entire evening I had spent within an hour, I was within a mile of my brother. He didn't know I was in Bassett. I didn't know he was in Bassett. Later that day, my brother's daughter, my niece, telephoned the man involved in the accident to let him know that she understood that it was just an accident and that we as a family were going to move on a path of forgiveness. Less than 24 hours after both of her parents had been killed, she's on the telephone with the man involved, letting them know. My mother, who lives in Northern Virginia, she was not going to come down to Southwest Virginia till the visitation and funeral the following Thursday and Friday. And I was telephoning her every day, and on Tuesday I called and my sister answered the phone. And she said, "It's not a good day." I said, "That's okay. You let her know I called. You let her know I'll call again tomorrow. But if she feels like it, she can certainly give me a call later." About 10 o'clock Tuesday night, my phone rang and it was my mother. And in a broken, coarse voice, she asked me, "Did your sister tell you?" I was like, "No, Mom, she didn't. She just said it wasn't a good day. She said, I got a letter from your brother today. You see, my brother, who was always so very good about letting the people in his life know how he felt about them, how much he loved and appreciated them, on the very day he was killed, he had handwritten a letter to my mother. And the letter said, how good a mom you've been to us 6 kids, and how much I love you. And the letter talked about how he had missed opportunities to visit with her, but how he was looking forward to coming and being with her for her birthday in September. When she got done explaining to me what was in this letter, my response to her was, what a treasure. What a treasure. You know exactly how he felt about you. His last thoughts were of you. And it was almost a transformation taking place over the phone where I could almost see her smiling across the phone line. They were buried in the same coffin together. My brother was laid on his back. His wife of 39 years was laid on her side, inside the comfort of his arm around her. The night of the funeral, members of that biker church returned to the scene of the accident to hold a vigil. What I've failed to tell you to this point, that the driver of the pickup truck was a pastor of an African-American church, also in Bassett. From the front door of his church, you can see the stadium. You can see where this ambulance fire happened. You can see where the motorcycle wreck occurred. Practically, you can see the biker church if it weren't for a grove of trees. And members of the biker church and the African American church, House of Purpose, came together the night of the funeral to hold a vigil there at the accident scene, praying for one another, praying for our earthly loss, praying for that 15-year-old boy that he would be protected by what he had witnessed, and praying for the pastor that he would be lifted up and love and mercy would be shown him. The Friday after the funeral, this pastor and his wife and a couple leaders from their church made a trip to Floyd to visit with my niece and her husband and their children so that the healing process could begin. And C.J. Martin, this pastor, he shared with me the anxiety and the feelings that were going through him as they made that drive from Bassett to Floyd. I can't imagine. As they pulled up in the driveway, one of the elders got out of the car to go to the front door to be sure they were at the right house. And when my niece answered the door, she pushed past the elder, sprinted to the vehicle that C.J. Martin was in. And as he climbed out of the car, she threw her arms around his neck and said, "I love you." We're going to move forward a couple of months. This man was charged in this accident. And a few days before he was to go to court, I got a stirring in me that I needed to be there. Now, I talked about the fact that our family had already moved on a path of forgiveness. Going to court really wasn't on my to-do list. If I showed up at his trial, I don't know that I can hold it together. Maybe I'll have an outburst and the judge will make it harder on him. I don't want to go. As those 5 days passed, the morning of his court case, I drove from Boone's Mill to Roanoke to my job. 9 o'clock in the morning, I'm sitting at my desk. By 10 o'clock, the sense that I need to be in that courtroom was so strong that I got in my car and I made that 1 hour drive south to the Henry County Courthouse. About 45 minutes into that drive, a message came across my spirit. I need you to pay the fine. Pay the fine. That could be thousands of dollars. My wife didn't know where I was going. My family didn't know where I was going. What do you mean you need me to pay the fine? And the very next message was, you don't worry about a thing. You show up and be ready to pay the fine, and I'll make a way. I haven't been in church in 5 years. I got to that courthouse, I was about 2 hours early. Made my way into the courtroom. I grabbed a seat about four rows back, and I sat there trying to reflect on what the heck had just happened. And my wife and I, we usually don't make a habit of going out and spending thousands of dollars without one another knowing. And here I am sitting in this courtroom, and I've kind of reconciled the fact that I'm going to watch this thing play out. Whatever happens, I'll go to the clerk, I'll write a check, and then I'll use my time on the way home to figure out how I'm going to explain it to my Proverbs 31 woman. And as I sat there, another message comes. I need you to tell the state trooper who you are and why you're here. I was scared to death. There were three state troopers standing in front of the courtroom, and they had been talking during the different cases in between. And so I went and I stood a few feet away, and I eavesdropped on their conversation. I was trying to figure out which one investigated the accident. When I figured it out, I went over to the trooper and I said, "Sir, my name is J.T. Clark. I'm the brother and brother-in-law of the two that were killed. I wasn't subpoenaed to be here. I wasn't invited. I don't have a role. But I came to pay the fine." And this trooper looked back at me as if I was from a different planet. And he turned and he picked up his investigation folder and he walked me back over to where I had been seated. He sat down next to me and he leaned into me and he said, "Now, what did you say to me?" Well, certainly there's a lot of things that crossed my mind just about that. I talked about how the fact I hadn't been in church in a long time. I was trying to process this in a very natural sense. If I told this guy that I got a message, what was going to happen to me? You know? And so, when he asked that question, I reassured him that I was there to pay the fine. And he responded back by saying, "I've been doing this 37 years, and I've never heard anything like this in my entire career." And he opened up this folder, and he proceeded to walk me through the findings of his investigation, sharing with me the accident report, sharing with me the details of what he found that night, and showing me the photographs of the accident scene. And as I sat there next to him on the inside, I'm screaming, "What are you doing to me, man? I'm trying to hold it together here." When he got done, he said, "When I presented this evidence to the Commonwealth's attorney, the Commonwealth's attorney considered vehicular manslaughter charges against the driver of the truck." He said, "In every case I've ever dealt with, the family always wants more penalty, not less." He said, "But there was something different about this case." He said, "Something moved in me. And I pushed back against the Commonwealth's attorney and I told him, 'Not here, not in this case.' Mr. Martin was charged with reckless driving." He said, "The other thing you need to know about me, I lost my 24-year-old son in a motor vehicle crash a few years ago." He said, "I'm still struggling to deal with the circumstances of that. And you walk in here and you're going to pay somebody's fine?" And he got up and he walked away from me, shaking his head. The judge comes into the courtroom a little while later, calls the case, and for the first time I see who Mr. Martin is. He stood up and he came forward with his attorney and the Commonwealth's attorney and the state trooper. The state trooper looks back over his left shoulder as he's standing in front of the judge and he points a finger in my direction and said, "You're a part of this now too. You better come on up here." Scared. Made my way up and I stood to the left of the state trooper, and the defense attorney tells the judge, "Your Honor, we're prepared to accept the plea deal of improper driving." And the judge looks back at him. "Improper driving? I got two dead people here. Somebody's going to have to explain something to me." And he swears us in and he asks the state trooper to give an account. And the state trooper, who had sat with me about an hour before, tells the judge the very same story, shows him the very same accident photos in the report that he had shared with me, except this is the second time I'm hearing it. And what I didn't understand a short while before, God was preparing me for what I was going to have to experience in front of that judge. And when he gets done giving his account, he said, "Your Honor, there's two more things you need to know. This is J.T. Clark. He's the brother and brother-in-law of the two that were killed. And he intends to pay any fine you impose in this case." When Mr. Martin heard this, he broke down. Oh, my Jesus. Tears flowed. He sobbed. Because what I found out about a week ago, as CJ and I took a ride together, he thought I had come to that courtroom to be a witness against him. When the judge heard what I was there to do, he turned his head, he looked at me. What in the world would you do that for? Your Honor, our family has already moved on a path of forgiveness toward Mr. Martin. Frankly, actions speak louder than words. If my being here, paying his fine, helps him to accept and receive that forgiveness, so that he can do what he's called to do, enjoy his wife, enjoy his son, enjoy his life. Your Honor, that's what I'm here to do. We love Mr. Martin. And with that, the judge picks up a piece of paper and he moves it in front of him and he says, a few minutes ago, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to accept a charge of improper driving. And now I'm writing on this piece of paper that the fine is $5. And with that, I walked over to Mr. Martin and I grabbed him up in a big bear hug and I said, I got you, brother. It's going to be all right. You see, what I was reminded of, just as the Israelites were reminded as they escaped Egypt, you just show up and be ready to pay the fine, and I'll make a way. And he showed up big in that courtroom that day. This story that I shared with you this morning is continuing to unfold. A song they sing at CJ's church has a lyric in it that says, I just can't tell it all. And friends, we'd be here for the next week if I tried to tell you everything that's happened since August 21st. But I will share with you, today is a very special day for, this weekend's very special for several reasons. We've talked about it being Father's Day. Reason enough to celebrate. Yesterday would have been my brother's 60th birthday. Today was their 40th wedding anniversary. And at 3 o'clock this afternoon, Pastor CJ Martin is making another trip to Floyd, this time to baptize my brother's two youngest grandchildren in the same waterway that my brother baptized the other grandchildren. Love, forgiveness. He pours it out. All we have to do is be willing to receive it for ourselves. And as we learned from the children this morning, he just wants us to show it to our neighbors. Be a light in the darkness. Show love to one another. I have an audio clip I'd like to share with you. It's about a minute long. And then I'll turn things back over to Ms. Scott. This audio clip was played for the first time on April 9th. Again, I just can't tell it all. This aired on the Liberty-based radio station, My Journey FM. I'm going to try to hold it up here to my...
My oldest brother and his wife were killed in a motorcycle accident in August. And in October, when the man that was involved in the accident went to court, I was moved by the Holy Spirit to go to the court.
It's the hardest thing to give away, and the last thing on your mind today. It always goes to those who don't deserve.
And the very next message was, you don't worry about a thing. You show up and be ready to pay the fine, and I'll make a way.
Forgiveness.
Paying his fine helps him to accept and receive that forgiveness so that he can do what he's called to do and enjoy his wife and son. Your Honor, that's what I'm here to do.
So let it go and be amazed by what you see through eyes of grace. The prisoner that it really frees is you.
Someone is hearing that there's forgiveness, healing, and new life on the journey.